Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, January 25th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is known as the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using for almost 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, print it out, copy it off, and use it as often as you'd like. Absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or called in to give powerful testimonials about how the use of these tools has improved their life quality. You can also go to your App Store, either the Google Play or Apple App Store, and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And when you do that, it'll give you access to a completely free and private app. Before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And that app contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments or questions. If you would be so kind as to let us know if you have comments or questions, you can do that by calling in at 563-999-3581. And when you do that, press 1. It'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. Alternatively, what you could do is send an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie Rice at jeannie@whyagain.org. And when we get those comments or questions, we address them on the air, and then you can get access to it through the archives. And we appreciate when people do that, whether it's sending an email with a question or calling in with a comment or a question, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention with this work is for us to be of service. And it's far easier to be of service when people tell us specifically what would be useful for them. This year, following last year's Course in Miracles workbook lessons, this year we're working through or working with, I would say, is probably more accurate, the material from the Christ mind pathway, and that is the core of it for us is going to be the way of mastery. It contains a series of teachings, some of which have been published as books, the way of the servant, the Yeshua letters, the three books that comprise the way of mastery, the way of the heart, the way of transformation, and the way of knowing, and various other pieces of material that I will bring up that come from JM or other people who have been on this pathway. And yesterday I was talking about an email, a response to a blog post that JM got, JM, John Mark Hammer, JM, who is the person who brought forth the Christ mind material, the way of the servant, and the way of mastery, and the Yeshua letters. And a student asked him, what's the difference between A Course in Miracles and the way of mastery, and where do they conflict? And he started out by saying, first, let's understand that you perceive a conflict, but these higher level teachings do not have conflict in them. They simply, when they seem to have conflict in them, they simply reveal the limit of our own awareness, the current limits, those things that can be grown past. And he reminds us that teaching is an art, not a science. And in any true teaching, the point is to help the mind or the soul grow past its infatuation with illusions and identifications, and to grow past the limits that they don't even know imprison them. And so there's a warning to not be a follower of a book or a scripture, but to use whatever tools you can to get access to the teaching source within all of us. And he talks about how in the Course in Miracles, some of the students get hung up on the idea that the world isn't real and the body isn't real. And he says, you know, the difficulty with that is that it becomes an escape for people so they don't have to deal with the deeper levels of their own egoic processing. And he says there are teachers and students of Course in Miracles that have made their way past that point. He cites Brent Haskell's Journey Beyond Words as one example, and Marianne Williamson's work. And so, you know, even JM is not claiming that he's got the one true way. He's just saying that it is possible to understand that some people get stuck in the thoughts and in the words and in trying to have an intellectual comprehension, and that's not what this pathway is about. This pathway is about learning to live from a different perspective, learning to usher yourself into different experiences, some would say deeper and deeper experiences, and that what's really being offered with the Christ mind pathway is a set of tools that if one applies them in their life, they can be moved to such compassion that your whole life becomes submitted to this personal transformation and your whole life is focused on understanding how to be more compassionate towards yourself and others in every moment, even before every breath. And that's not a simple five-step process and boom, you're there at enlightenment. He says, everybody who takes up the path of genuine spirituality and is committed to fully waking every one of those people is going to struggle. They're going to get lost. They're going to find themselves in dilemmas that they couldn't possibly imagine before their journey begins. That is all part of the passage. It's inherent in the waking up process itself. And he says, the way of mastery contains an ascending current, an absolute metaphysic found in the Course in Miracles. And the truth of it is, yeah, at some level, this is a dream. But in a sense, it's a dream of how we perceive ourselves to be in separation from the rest of actuality, from our Creator and the rest of life. And it also emphasizes, this way of mastery emphasizes, that feeling is a central part of the process of turning the mind back in on itself to penetrate the roots of that separation, the way our mind has created the dream of separation, and the way that awakening to that can end that process of that dream of separation. Jam wants us to know that the mind has depth. It is more than just the component that forms mental concepts and affects perception. There's a feeling possibility. And in the context of cultivating presence and witnessing and a growing capacity to meet all that arises within the self and within your mind, meeting it with love itself, that is a deeper level of mind. And he says, working at this level broadens profoundly the waking process. It reveals its revelation, insight, and its capacity to enfold an experience of creation that's not available at the limited level of thought and concept. So, this is not about we have the right words and other people have the wrong words. We have the right interpretation of the right words and other people have the wrong interpretation of the right words. Everybody's fine. Everybody's perfectly okay to pursue the path in whatever way they want. This is not about the words. This is about awakening to potential that your consciousness has, and I use the word consciousness here rather than mind, that your consciousness has, so we can differentiate between the simple physical brain within the confines of my skull and this potential for experiencing that goes into feeling and emotion and connection beyond words and insight and intuition, flashes of insight. So, yesterday we were reading a little bit from Lesson 2. And in Lesson 2, I think I just read the first couple pages. And I would pick up where I left off, but I want to back up a little bit because he's letting us know the title of this lesson is You Create Your Own Experience. And he's talking about how your physical body is a communication device and that everything that you think, speak, say, and do, feel emotionally is a way to communicate and create. It says communication is creation. These two are one and the same. Therefore, if you would create well, simply ask yourself, what am I committed to communicating? When you're in your car and somebody pulls in front of you and honks her horn and swears at you and flips the universal sign of disapproval with one of their fingers, think about what are you committed to communicating? think about what will my creations express. When you're at the dog park and somebody comes up and yells at you because your dog is not on a leash, think about what will my creations convey to others, because what I value is what I engage in, and that is what I communicate to myself and to the world around me. Because what I seek to convey reveals what I believe is the truth of myself, my capital S self, my true self, to the world. He goes on and says, therefore, beloved friends, as we begin to focus on, to refine, to deepen, and to mature in the way of the heart, it is wise to begin at the beginning. The beginning of this pathway is simply this. You are as the Creator has created you to be. You are an infinite focus of consciousness. Your very sense of existence is nothing more than a feedback loop or a feedback mechanism so that you can witness the effects of the choices you are making. And you are making those choices in the deep, deep depth of your mind that rests right alongside the mind of God, and you're making those choices right before you take an action, right before you speak a word. That's the beginning of this pathway, to wake up to the realization that you are as you were created to be, and you are an infinite focus of consciousness. Your very existence is nothing more than a feedback loop or a feedback mechanism, not so you can teach others, but so you can witness the effects of the choices you are making in the very deep, deep depth of your mind that rests right alongside the mind of God. Therefore, in each moment of your existence, which includes this bodily incarnation, but is not limited to it, you are literally allowing through deliberate choice, though perhaps unconscious choice, to bring forth a vibration of thought or a vibration of creation. And you are choosing to commune and communicate that thought to the world in an attempt to experience communion with all of life, whether that's a friend, a parent, a child, a beloved, or with the clouds that pass through the sky, or even with the earth itself. Each gesture, each thought, the way that the body breathes, all of these things are going on constantly, and they are communicating and revealing the effect of what you have allowed to make a home in your mind. Every one of us has watched someone we know walk into a room, and we've seen a difference between somebody who bursts into a room, who glides into a room, who struts into a room, who slinks into a room. And as I say these words, every one of us has different energies loaded up for the description of each of those words. Everyone is always communicating what they value most in that moment. And this pathway is calling us to awaken to what is the potential versus what is actual in what we're doing. What have we been conditioned to believe about ourselves as lowly or unworthy or better than everybody, and whether or not we are active and conscious in how we're communicating that with every word, every thought, every action, every breath. So please understand well, the book goes on to say, the way of the heart requires, this isn't optional, the way of the heart requires that you allow yourself to rest in the simplicity of this following truth. I am pure spirit, undefiled and unaffected by anything or anyone. I am given full power to choose and therefore to create my own experience as I would have it be. So this is about the way of the heart. This is about the Christ mind path. When it says something like, please understand this well, the way of the heart requires your ears should perk up. What does it require? Because if I want what this path promises, what the promise is at the beginning of this book where it says, I promise you this, right? Well, what's the promise? Why am I reading this? What am I hoping to achieve? If I want what the promise contains, I better pay attention to what is required to achieve it. And what this promise is if you become wholly committed to awakening from the dream that you have dreamt since the stars first began to appear in the heavens, and if your one desire is to be only what you were created to be, then lay at the altar of your heart with every breath, and even before every breath, lay down everything you think you know, everything you think you need, and find the way to look lovingly upon every place that fear has made a home in your mind. If you do that and allow correction to come, it will come. This is the promise. If you want correction, if you want to be awake and aware to your presence in each new present moment, as the extension of love in form, take the path. What is it required to take the path? The way of the heart requires that you allow yourself to rest in the simplicity of this truth. You are pure spirit. You are undefiled and unaffected by anything or anyone. You are given full power to choose and therefore to create your experience as you would have it be. You must allow yourself to rest in that truth if you want to achieve or to acquire what is promised in this pathway. Now, that's not quite the I that thinks of himself as Tim Hayes, who lives in Illinois and is a certain height and weight and has a certain degree. That's not the I we're talking about. That's the egoic part of the mind. For that is just one of our infinite creations. And that came along somewhere down the line in this incarnation. It's a very, very small part of the mind that you are. Capital M mind. We're speaking here of the I that is you, that is pure spirit. And that pure spirit knows it exists, even though it does not know the time of its own creation. You are not the totality of creation. You are a spark of the light of creation. And you are pure spirit. So therefore, we would like you to know this. And he gives a quote. I am only this, and in each moment, regardless of what I believe I see, regardless of the feelings that arise within my awareness, I and I alone am wholly 100% responsible for them. No one caused them. No great force in the universe has made this perception well up within my consciousness. I have selected it. Just as you would go to the grocery store and choose what you will have for dinner and then go home and experience your creation, so too do you choose each and every experience in this life. When you choose a perception, you lodge it in the mind. Then it expresses itself through the body, through the environment that you create around yourself, and through the friends that you would call into your awareness. Every aspect of the life you live is the symbol of what you have chosen to experience and therefore to convey throughout creation. The way of the heart, once again, begins with the simple acceptance of this simple truth. I am as I was created to be. I was created by the Creator in its image, and I am a creator always. I create by what I choose to focus my conscious awareness on. It is a creative force, and it's always on. I can never turn it off. I can only choose to direct it towards loving, compassion, appreciation, joy, living into extending the energy of creation in form, living into being a message about my true nature and the true nature of life around me. Or I can choose to focus my thoughts on anger, bitterness, hurt, grief, competition, comparison, any form of judgment, contraction, rage. Every time I choose a focus for this creative energy that we call mind energy, your awareness, it creates just like whatever I point it towards. The book goes on and asks, what then would you ask your creations to communicate? Why do you make the choices you're making? You all know perfectly well that sometimes you seem to be compelled, and the ego wants you to believe that you are compelled, that you're compelled to certain actions, certain feelings, certain choices, certain perceptions, certain statements, and you're compelled to that by something that surely exists outside of yourself. This pathway wants you to understand that is never true. In no circumstance is there anything of creation that has the power to dictate to you the choice you will make. You have the power, the infinite power, to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And it is only the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment which creates your experience of life in that moment. It goes on and says in the next section, titled, Peace Flows from Alignment with the Mind of the Creator. Therefore, the pathway of awakening, the way of the heart, this pathway must start with the decision to embrace the truth that is true always. I am a creator of all that I think and see and experience. I am free always. Nothing impinges upon me but the thoughts I have chosen to hold within the energy of my mind. Nothing imprisons me but my own perception of imprisonment. Nothing limits me at any level or dimension of experience except for that which I have chosen. The way of the heart, then, embraces all things, trusts all things, and eventually transcends all things. This, by the way, is exactly the same definition they give for love. Love embraces all things, trusts all things, and transcends all things. Why does the way of the heart embrace all things, trust all things, and transcend all things? Because it begins by assuming complete and total responsibility for what is being channeled through it. You all serve as a channel from the moment you arise until the moment you arise. Even during your sleep, you are choosing that which flows through your consciousness. And you're not choosing it at a conscious level, clearly, especially when you're sleeping, but your higher self, this part of you that wants integration, that wants full awareness, that wants to awaken from the dream, is choosing your experience. The goal that we seek has never changed. It is, in truth, a journey without distance. It is merely the return to where you are always, that you might begin anew to create deliberately, clearly, and with the perfect knowledge that if you are experiencing something, it is because you are the source of it, and for no other reason. The way of the heart is not a way of gaining power. It is not a way in which you will finally be able to make the world what you want it to be. If it's not a way of gaining power, and if it is not a way of making the world what you finally want it to be, what is it? It is that pathway in which you learn to transcend and to dissolve from your consciousness every perception, every thought which is out of alignment with what is true. The thought of death is out of alignment. The thought of fear is out of alignment. The thought of guilt is out of alignment. Alignment? What's alignment? The thought of eternal life is in alignment. The thought of perfect safety is in alignment. The thought of peace is in alignment. The realization of innocence is in alignment. Thoughts of joy and forgiveness are in alignment, and they reflect the truth, capital T truth, that is true always. For although you are given complete free will to create as you choose, the soul begins to learn that what brings it the highest joy, the highest peace, the highest bliss imaginable is that which flows from the mind of creation through the mind of the channel, through the soul, and it expresses itself in the field of experience. It is for this reason that creation's will is that you be happy, and that your happiness is found in choosing to restore your perfect alignment with only the voice of the Creator. The way of the heart is that pathway that begins with a commitment to healing and to awakening, and it is founded upon the premise that the axiom that we're going to give to you here: you are perfectly free at all times. Everything that is experienced has been by your choice, and at no time has there been any other cause. It seems simple, and yet what soul has not known resistance to this idea? If you bake a cake and it turns out well, you say, "Huh, I did that." If you bake a cake and it turns out very badly, you think, "It must have been the flour. It must have been the temperature of the oven. Surely there's something that caused this creation not to be what I would have truly desired." It takes great courage and great faith to look upon all of your creations, your thoughts, your feelings, your manifestations, and to look upon all of them with love and with the innocence of a child. For example, you plant a garden and you have all the things wither and die, and yet you smile and say, "I planted this garden and I alone have done this. Well, I'll get a little hungry here, so I might as well go to the store. Why is this important? Because a long time ago, the soul began to create the perception that it was something other than it was created to be. And the voice for ego emerged within the garden of consciousness. As the soul, which is that deepest aspect of mind that you have all known, as the soul began to identify with a voice that was other than the voice of the Creator, that voice that you identified with has led you to believe that your creations determine your worthiness. Do you know that feeling? Therefore, if what you create is not up to snuff, it means that you, in the core of your beingness, you are some kind of a failure. But I say unto you, in reality, failure is not even remotely possible. Why? Well, if you plant a garden and the seed does not turn into a beautiful flower, but it withers and dies, that experience is a creation and you have done it. And because all events in space and time, everything you experience, are perfectly neutral, there is, in reality, never failure. The only failure seems to occur within your own consciousness when you believe that it is not acceptable to receive your own and embrace your own creation with love and with innocence. Instead, you can choose to look upon it, to experience it, and to recognize your perfect safety in doing so. For it is from there that you can decide whether to continue in that form of creation or whether to think differently and to approach things differently. That's where the catch is. That part of the mind began to teach you long, long ago what to accept as acceptable creations and what to not accept, what to take responsibility for and what to deny responsibility for. And that conflict creates the illusion of separation. When taken to its extreme, one discovers your hospitals are full of those in deep depression, paranoia, and the feeling within the being, within the human mind, of feeling alienated and alone. Helplessness, hopelessness, despair, anger, and hatred are all symptoms of a fundamental delusion that has occurred within the depth of the mind. It has occurred because there has been a long history of having cultivated the skill of listening to the wrong voice. The wrong voice is the voice of the ego. That voice has taught you to judge, to pick, and to select what you will be responsible for. The more you move into that consciousness, the harder it seems to ever hope for a chance of transcending the sense of separation, conflict, and lack of peace. So, I will take a breath since we are only about 20 minutes left in today's first half of the show. And I'll ask in this breather for comments, questions, reactions, 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, and let us know how this is sitting with you. How it feels to be told in this pathway that something is required. And what is required is the acceptance of the truth that is true always. What is required is the releasing of judgment. What is required is awakening to your true nature, to getting past the thought process and ushering yourself into an experience. And the experience cannot be spoken. It's why in so many of the ancient teachings it says, he who says he knows doesn't know. She who says she doesn't know, she's on to something. 563-999-3581. Call that number. Press 1. Let us know how this is sitting for you. How is it landing for you? Is it too fast? Is it too slow? Is it just right, as Goldilocks would say? I had somebody in my office earlier, and they were talking about how they're bumping into discomfort because the more they do work like this, the more they read and sit with and try to actually apply good psychological, spiritual ideas in their life. The more they do that, the more people notice them and want to give them credit for it, and the more discomfort they feel. And we were talking about the importance of the recognition that we're all the same. And Dr. Michael Rice talks about, from the ancient Aramaic language that came out of the Kabor's manuscript translations, that the word for humility is not about, as Michael Rice would say, it's not about groveling in the dirt and making yourself less than somebody. It's about the ability to look for and see the highest and best in another. And once you've seen that highest and best in another, choosing to cooperate only with that. So yeah, there might be somebody who's coming at you in a rage. They might be coming at you with deep depression. They might be coming at you with hurt or confusion. And humility would be the ability for you to see past that to their core, to their being of brilliance and light, to the fact that they are a being of brilliance and light just as you are. And the truth of it is that they have either temporarily forgotten or yet to discover their brilliance, and they are no different than any other human, any other person who has consciousness in physical form. And when you see that, and you can live directly from that, that's what I say can be said to be the only significant difference between you and any person that's ever lived or ever will live, is your ability to live in the deep realization that we are all the same. And that's, essentially, that's a paradox. That's a koan. That's, what do you mean? I asked you what the difference is, and you said there's no difference. Yeah, there's a difference, and the difference is how much I recognize that there's no difference. But the statement is, the only significant difference between you and anybody who's ever lived, or ever will live, is your ability to live in the realization that we are all the same. Live from that realization. So this is not an idea. This is not a reading from a book. This is not a teaching from some pulpit in church. This is the ability, that quality of humility is the ability to see clearly that we are all connected and we are all the same, and then to live from that, to choose to cooperate only with that part of those around us that is their highest and best. And when I do that, I help others live in the realization that it is a trap to put somebody else on a pedestal. It is a trap to put myself down. It is a trap to make a distinction with a value judgment on it. better, worse, up, down, good, bad, right, wrong. It alluded to it in the second lesson here, in just the first four pages. All events are neutral. It'll get more clear about that, more explicit about this next point as we go on. While all events are neutral, my thoughts about them are not neutral. My thoughts about it, the focus of my conscious awareness is what's going to create my experience of life. But the flow of life force, the way life unfolds, is only, always, and forever a neutral event. It's like one breath leading to another. It's the flow of consciousness and creative energy, and in that way, a flower blooming in the spring is the same as a volcano erupting and wiping out an island. It's just energy flowing, moving, creating. One of my favorite things to talk about is how we as humans have the audacity to talk about natural disasters. The fascinating thing is that prior to human language, these events would happen all the time, but there were no disasters. They were just events. And an event is neutral. All events are neutral until a person with a certain arrangement of mind energy and a certain base of conclusions decides to put a label on it and generate an emotional response based on that label, generate an experience for themselves and an emotional response about that flow of life, that creation, that event. And that's what creates what we would call the impact emotionally of an event. Area code 828, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Dr. Tim. It's Magda. How are you?
Hello, Magda. Long time no hear from you. How are you?
I'm very good, and I want to tell you how very, very much I've been enjoying your reading. I just am so pleased to hear what I've been wanting to read for a long time and haven't picked up the book and gotten any more than a few pages. So this is a wonderful way to receive it, at least the first time. So thank you very, very much. And
you're
then
welcome. And deserving. Go ahead.
Thank you. I also have something I needed a little bit of help with, a bit of direction. Years and years ago, I was in two different relationships, two different times, with a man who, in both cases, I'm going to use the word that really echoes my feelings about it, cheated on me. I think there's something to that, cheated on me, not just cheated. And so I dealt with betrayal and trust issues and all of that. And I know that there's a whole lot more that I need to do, even though I've done a lot of worksheets over time. This comes up every time the man I'm currently in relationship with and have been for almost 12 years now, when he goes shopping, when he goes to meet up with a friend to help do some work on another property, it's so interesting that I have the jealousy thing come up. I wonder if he's really doing that, or I wonder if he's going to see his, are you ready, girlfriend. So I just think there's a lot there. And I have for a while now been getting the intuition that what I need to do is write about it to help me to understand what that means to me. so that I can then do a spin-off on either worksheets or guided, whatever, writing, mind shifters. But I don't know how to word it, and I have a feeling it's incredibly simple. And obviously I have a block against it. I don't know what I can use as a stem to begin the writing.
You know, there's what comes to me to say in response to this is that because I've experienced you as intelligent and desiring of change and armed with really good tools for a lot of years now, I don't know if you ran into Michael Rice's work 12 years ago or before you met Chuck, but you had at least 12 years of exposure to Michael's work.
Right.
And so the fact that it still comes up in your thought speaks to me of the fact that it's stuck in there. It's stuck with trauma energy. It's stuck with a belief that you're holding on to that has not been dismantled. So rather than, you know, do more and more of the same and get similar results, I would encourage you to think in terms of perhaps just slight but modifications to your process, whether that is pursuing something that's a specific trauma work or whether it's looking at Diedrich Wolfack's Choose Again, because he has a slightly different perspective where he says, okay, so Chuck goes out and he's somewhere for an hour and a half or 3 hours and you don't have direct eyes on him and your mind goes to paranoid thoughts that he's cheating on you or whatever. Mm-hmm. In that moment when that pattern of thought comes up, notice your emotion. And the Diedrich Wolzak work would, step one is, you don't blow this off. You admit, oh, it's up, this is a problem, it's still here, I want to change it. It's a problem, I'm triggered, I'm upset, whatever. The first step is you don't just say, oh, it's no big deal. Oh, that's just a silly paranoid thought. You recognize that that emotion and that negative thought are coming up because something's stuck in you.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is you own it 100%. This is right in line with Michael Rice's work. 100% ownership. I'm creating this. Chuck's not creating this because he's not here and because he's cheating on me or whatever. The third step is you ask yourself what the emotion is that you're feeling, and you get very, very clear about the specific emotion and flavor and where you feel it in your body. And you ask yourself if it's a familiar emotion, and it's always going to be familiar because those first few years of our lives, you know, depending upon which expert you listen to, from 4 to 5 to 8 years old, we create or we download every emotional experience that we're just then going to replay the rest of our lives. So he says it's going to be familiar, and then you ask yourself, what is one of the earliest times that I remember this specific emotion?
Mm-hmm.
And then trust what bubbles up. And it might have been from 2 years ago. It might have been from 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. It might have been from 120 years ago. You just trust what bubbles up. And then you move into what he calls the letting yourself experience that moment from, let's say you were age 7, or, you know, one person we did work like this, and it went back to when he was 16 years old and he got dumped by this woman that he thought he was going to marry. And just let yourself see yourself as vividly as you can, what age you are, where you are, who else is there, and what's happening, what's going on. And then you ask that younger self, that younger version of self, just like you would with the three early memories of conflict exercise that Michael Rice has, as though you're interviewing your 7-year-old self, and you ask yourself to be clear about when this situation happened, what did you, as a 7-year-old, make it mean about you?
Oh, okay.
It'll always be something negative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fifth step. You ask yourself, what did I make this mean about me? And then the sixth step is, he calls it a two-step forgiveness process. And this would be where Michael would, you know, have differences, because Michael uses the word forgiveness differently than Diedrich Wolczak does.
Mm-hmm.
But Diedrich says, you do a two-step process back and forth between the younger self and the adult self, and you want to do, the first thing is, you want to coach the younger self to, quote, forgive, close quotes,
mm-hmm.
his or herself for believing the negative. Right? I'm going to dismantle the negative belief. It was a false. How do we know it's false? Because it's negative. It's understandable that I would come to that conclusion. I was only 7 years old. I didn't know any better, et cetera. So I'm going to dismantle the negative conclusion, and then I'm going to remind myself to remember the positive statement of truth, which is my value as a person is strictly internal and unchanging. It's not subject to an error of thought or word. Your value as a person is whole and complete. You are, as this Way of Mastery was just saying, you remain as you were created to be. And the
mm-hmm.
way Diedrich talks about that is, he says, I forgive myself for believing the negative, and I forgive myself for forgetting the positive. So with regulatory
mm-hmm.
speech and Michael's work, we would say, I dismantle my attachment to the negative thought about myself. I see it as false,
mm-hmm.
and I dismantle my attachment to it, and I remind myself that my value is internal and unchanging, that I remain as I was created to be. And I move back and forth between those two statements and seeing it accurately and dismantling the negative and accepting the positive. And then I come back to the original situation, take a breath or two and scan my body and notice if it feels differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a way to try and identify and then work with what might be one of the, and there might be several, but what might have been one of the contributing events in your life that you downloaded as a trauma.
Right, right. Wow.
And then,
that
of course, there's
true.
EMDR, and there's EFT tapping, and there are other things that
mm-hmm.
can be very helpful specifically to break loose and release the energy of trauma. And that's what I would direct you towards. And then when you start doing that, if you have one of those memories come up, then there'll be all kinds of worksheets. You'll know just how to do them. There'll be all kinds of mind shifters that will unravel.
Right, right.
If you let the question, if you let yourself ask a question based on an emotional energy that you're experiencing in the moment, and let whatever bubbles up be your guide to the part of your mind that you've been hiding from mm-hmm. yourself.
That is excellent. I knew that there was something that I needed to do around, tickle.
Well, there's something in your throat right now that wants you to not even say it. So just breathe and soften. We're at the end of our time. Don't even try to talk. Just breathe and soften and recognize your throat right now is clogging up even at the thought of speaking it. So breathe, soften, tap the phone on something twice if you're okay, once if you're not, and we'll send the paramedics.
Tap, tap.
All right, oh, all right.
Thank you. Wow. Fabulous. I wish we had more time,
right.
And it's fine.
Well, I'm sure
thank
Michael
you.
And Jeannie would be willing to explore it with you if you need to, but we're at the end of
yeah.
our hour. I'm going to go ahead and mute you and thank you for the call, and blessings and good luck with the work on it. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Kim. Good conversation. Awesome. Good process.
You're welcome, and have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is Tuesday, January the 25th, 2022. And their call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1. And that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to dial in. I'll invite you to go to our website, as I always do, whyagain.org. And you can click the Start Here button. You can scroll down, hit the bullseye. There's lots of places you can go. There's lots of things to see and just look at what all's going on. While I'm waiting on Michael to dial in, I wanted to share that we got an email yesterday, and it was real exciting. It was from a lady in Poland. And, I mean, just out of the blue, she writes and she says, let me find it here. I love the work. When I first saw the lecture on YouTube, and she gives me the link of which one she watched, it was like 7 years ago that this YouTube was made. I live in Poland, and I am sure that more people would be happy to enjoy this work. Can I translate this lecture into Polish and put it on YouTube as well? Of course, saying and writing everywhere that it's your work and that I just translate it. I would, of course, put the link to your lecture and to this website. It helped me a lot in a time when I needed it most. So I want to spread the word for others, other people in need that maybe don't speak English. Please write and let me know what you think. And so we wrote her back and told her absolutely we would be delighted, and that if she sent us the link, that we would put it on our website so anybody, you know, that spoke Polish could click on it and watch it from our website as well, and that we would give her the accolades for doing the translation and everything. And she just wrote back and said, thank you, you all are angels. And so that was pretty cool. So we'll, and then we mentioned to her about also translating the book, and she said that she would translate the lecture first, and then she would be glad to translate the book. So that's underway. So that's exciting. Welcome, Michael. Hello, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. I had a little difficulty getting to my mute button. So welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here as we step into the next layer of the conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness and the profound, profound gifts that it offers. And I was talking to someone yesterday who really touched into and realized that one of the things that they were doing was literally terrorizing themselves. And in terrorizing themselves, they were terrorizing others. And of course, that doesn't mean going out and getting a gun and pointing at self or somebody else, but thoughts that are of a disintegrative nature that are disproportionate to the events of the moment. So out of that conversation came the question of, well, an invitation for everybody who's listening to look at, do you terrorize yourself? Do you terrorize others? Did you have a terrorist parent that you desperately wanted to get away from? You know, something like terrorizing thoughts are usually generational. Remember the power person dynamic from the codependence workshop, and that when that dynamic is operative in the mind, there are only three levels of behavior possible, depending on the level of stress one is under. And when there's no stress, one will tend to do whatever they did to get along with their power person. When stress starts to build, they'll do whatever they did to resist and survive with the power person. And when they become ultra-stressed, they'll do what the power person did to them that they hated the most. Now, of course, everybody would say, no, I would never do that. I hated that. Well, that's true. You did. But remember that the power person dynamic is instilled in the mind when one is in an unconscious condition, when the energy field is opened. You know, those three factors we've talked about, when somebody has more power over one's life than that individual does, when they're not functioning as love, of that situation perceives it as survival. In that situation, one opens one's field wide. So if a power person, this person who had control and won over you, terrorized you to do it, then in those moments of extreme terror, the energy field of, it's usually a child, not always, but the energy field of the child opens and becomes like a sponge. And that's just, you know, just like a sponge, that the energy dynamic of that is just sucked right in. 2, 10, 20, 50, 80 years later, if that's never been addressed and dealt with, three levels of behavior. No stress, you do what you did to get along. Stress builds, you do what you to resist and survive. Ultra stressed, you do what your power person did to you that you hated the most. And so when that behavior occurs, there's a little trick the mind plays. It is precisely, I mean, oftentimes right down to exactly the same word patterns as the power person terrorized with. But when your power person, if you were the subject of that and your power person did that to you, it was really clear they were terrorizing you. I got to get out of here. But in the future, you know, what happens at the unconscious level is one looks into the unconscious and says, oh, I'm in a high stress, ultra stress situation. Who do I know that won in this situation consistently? Oh, my power person. Well, let me look, and this is all an unconscious resonance process. Let me look at what my power person did, and that's what I'll do. Now, of course, I'm not going to call it terrorizing someone. I'll have a different title for it. I'll change the way I label the very behavior that my power person did to me that I pass on to someone else. And by relabeling it makes it acceptable. Then it might look like, well, I'm just calling attention to things for them. Well, I'm just, you know, correcting them. Well, I'm just making sure that they hear me. Whatever the dynamic is, that game gets changed. So, you know, terrorist thoughts can be things like, well, you know, what could have happened? Well, you know, a million things could have happened, but they didn't. Why would you terrorize yourself with that or someone else? Because you want to control your own behavior or control them, perhaps? It might be worth taking a look at. In a world where everybody's doing it, that kind of behavior looks normal. It's not normal for a human to do. They are not healthy. They're not healthy for the person who's engaging in them. They're not healthy for anyone else, even though in your family system they might have been the norm. And so if you find yourself doing that, utilizing in any given situation a fantasy disintegrative thought and forcing it on yourself or forcing it on someone else, that's self-terrorism. And you'll notice that, you know, we live in a culture, just taking a look at the political situation today, you'll notice that almost half the country, year after year in the political realm, is, what can I say, doing their best to force terrorist thoughts on the other half of the country. And, or taking out those terrorist thoughts on people who they consider to be their opposition or their enemy. And so it just seemed, you know, after that conversation with someone yesterday, that it might be something worth taking a look at. And here's what we deserve. And it doesn't matter what we've done. Treatment that someone deserves is not dependent upon their behavior. You know, that's why the commitment is, I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect. And when you realize how profoundly impacted we can be by these disintegrative energies, then the undoing, the forgiving of that inclination, and usually there is hostility attached to those energetic dynamics of terrorist thoughts. So a tool that we've got, and you can go to the website to download this, is called My Commitment. This comes from the Healing Through Relationships workshop. And so I'd like to make this commitment to you. And, you know, somebody might say, well, but they don't deserve that. It's like, okay. You know, I agree with you. I saw what they did. They sure don't deserve it. But the question is not, do they deserve it? The question is, do you deserve it? Because whatever you engage in, whenever you terrorize someone with your thought, no matter how subtle the implication is, you get the original. You're the one whose body says, oh, my God, I've got to protect against this. I've got to tighten. I have to lock up. I have to defend myself. And that's oftentimes what leads to disease processes. So whatever somebody's done, here's what they deserve. I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and be treated. I commit to always being sweetness in your life, to nurture you daily, and to treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect in my thoughts, words, and actions, whether in your presence or not. In every interaction, I commit to affection for you, to look for and acknowledge the highest and best in you as I surrender to love, our true nature. I will use only voice tones that reflect my deep caring for you, my connection to my source, my relationship with you, and our serenity will always be more important than any issue. I open my heart to embrace you in my love. I open my heart to be embraced in your love. Now, if you do that, the tendency is going to be for all hell to break loose because it's a different energy than most people have engaged in. It's an empowering set of thoughts, and it's empowering energy rather than terrorizing energy, and vitality will automatically lift. And when vitality lifts, what's hidden under the surface? So the last paragraph of the commitment is, if anything unlike love comes up, I will hold this in my heart and listen as I learn to speak, experience, and be responsible for my own realities. I'm here for and with you. I promise to keep communication open and keep love conscious, active, and present as we heal, celebrate life, and grow together. Now, my offering is the reason you want to do that with everyone in your life. Well, I just had somebody that committed a crime. Well, you know something? You should call the police and report them. And if the police see that there is reason for a crime and a charge of a crime, then you should press those charges. And you should go to court and you should testify about what happened, especially if it's something that's a danger, that could be a danger to others. You could be doing people a great favor. Well, that sure doesn't sound like it's in harmony with the commitment. Oh, absolutely, 2,000%. If someone's committed a crime in my presence, I need this energetic pattern in my field to keep me healthy, whatever they have done. Too many people predicate their behavior on what other people do, which means they have no standard of their own. People say, well, I did that because I felt like doing it. Well, I have an invitation for you to consider. Never do what you feel like doing ever again. Because if you do what you feel like doing, most people's feelings or emotions come from the unconscious. And so they're doing behaviors based on and motivated by what's in their unconscious. And often it turns out horribly. Pick a standard. Now, this commitment might be a good standard for you to consider. If not, go searching the world, find one, or create one. But choose to have a standard by which you live, and instead of basing your thoughts, your feelings, your behaviors on what other people do, which is what most of the world is doing, oh, I'm nice when other people are nice to me. Well, shouldn't I be nasty to somebody if they're nasty to me? Well, if I want the original of nasty, I should be nasty with them. Do they deserve it? Well, they might. Do I deserve it? Is the question you need to ask yourself. It takes huge discipline to recognize that you only want to source thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and attitudes in your life that come from love. That's it. your true nature. You know, if you've ever held a newborn child and tapped into the essence of the newborn, you know that the newborn is love. You know that that's who and what you are. Now, if you act like that's not what you are, you have a really serious problem. But notice your mind can trick you into blaming everybody else. Well, it's your fault that I'm doing this. Excuse me. You've done this 87 different times with 42 different people. Cut the crap. It's no one else's fault. But what you do is your responsibility. So we invite you to look at, and this commitment might be what works. It's something that has been in development for 40 years in my life. It's autobiographical. You'll get to look at, if you go through every issue in there, you'll get to see what I've gone through. And basically, the commitment started out very simply. It was just a couple of lines. And then each time I came across a situation where I didn't feel loving, I stopped, got back to a space of connectedness, and looked at what is the mind energy I can put into the model of the behavior I want to bring forward into the world, what's that going to look like? And that's how the commitment developed, piece by piece by piece. And if you look back over the years, you'll see several different renditions of it. In fact, there's some thoughts in this one that haven't been printed in the latest copy of the commitment because they're new. It's an ongoing live commitment. And I just put it out there that, you know, you might want to start and work on one of your own. It might take you 40 years. You might model it after this and you'll be done in 10 minutes, or you might just take this one. I'll just offer that if you find yourself unable to live what you say you're committed to living, and maybe you blame everybody else for because you don't do it, then you need to start to set up a system of thoughts that supports you in living what you say you're committed to living. And stop lying to yourself that you're only doing and saying, feeling, expressing, puking on others because of what they do. Because it's just a lie. It's the lie most people live. You know, I'm only saying this because you deserve it. Well, if you're going to get to what people deserve, this commitment is what they deserve. And why do they deserve it? Because you do. And if you originate thoughts, emotions, behaviors based on that commitment, then I guarantee your life is going to soar. Otherwise, you'll tend to play out the unconscious dynamics. You know, Carl Jung has a powerful saying where he says, our mentality is distinguished by the shameless naivety with which we judge our enemy. And in the judgment we pronounce upon him or her, we unwittingly reveal our own defects. We simply accuse our enemy of our own unadmitted faults. Do you have hostility or fear around the behavior of what someone else does? Then that's your fault. You have hostility or fear about. It doesn't mean that you can't stay connected to a space of love and invite or hold somebody accountable for things that are off the mark. But it does mean that you've got to have a clear pathway to consciously move into being consistent on all levels. You know, if we lived in a world, if what was modeled for us as children, and for most of us as children, what was modeled is the blame game. Whatever I'm going through, it's somebody else's fault. We watched, we heard, we listened and saw it happen. We heard people say things like, you make me so mad. And my offering is that's the biggest lie that's ever been told. And virtually everybody on the planet is telling themselves and everybody else that lie. There comes a point where we must recognize that the blame game that we've had modeled by authorities in our lives, you know, if we had a power person who terrorized us, then that's probably the game we play, even though we tell ourselves the lie that that's not really what we're doing. You just need to look at the fruit. You know, they said to Yeshua, how do you tell what's really going on in somebody's mind? He says, you look at their fruit. Look at the results you're producing. that's the game we play, that blame game, then we've taught those around us. We've modeled for others that game. And when they become as good at that fraud as we are, it's destructive to life. You know, our offering is that life is love flowing through a cell, period. And blame is reflected in speech, like, you know, if you did it to me, you make me angry. And the offering here is that you've never been angry, you've never been sad, you've never been afraid of anyone else. When you've been in that form of upset, you've been in that form of that upset because that upset is in you. When you tell your mind the lie that you're upset because of someone else, then your mind will literally generate a perceptual construct where somebody else shows up in your mind causing your upset. But that's all part of the fraud of the mind. So you've never been sad or angry about anything. But if there's sad and anger in you, anything can bring it up. And when you language that you're sad or angry about that, then you cut yourself off from the ability to heal. When you use words to instruct your mind to generate realities that make your perennial anger look like it's about or caused by them, your mind, just like everyone else's, obeys and generates constructs that reflect the lie that somehow it's they who are the cause of what's moving in you. These perceptions are hallucination, and most of the population is living in an hallucination. We need to wake up from our hallucinations. Here's how they're formed. When they live in denial, when I speak or think, so something outside of us is the cause of what's happening inside of us. You know, things like, you made me mad. It means your mind has to hide the real cause of what's at the root of that particular painful energy. And then it has to create a false picture of another cause. In doing that, a part of your mind is now hidden by the dissociation caused by denial. It's no longer available to you for change or for healing. But you can rest assured it will always contribute its pain whenever something resonates it into activity. So your mind attaches its unconscious pain to its pictures, its perceptions, and the cycle's complete. With perception, we block the world of the Creator, the world of love, and substitute a false picture. You might call it a graven image. It's an hallucination in which our pain is projected. And projection we would define as image making out of denied, dissociated content in our minds. That into our brain's image of them, and then seeing our projection as a true picture, we become convinced that they are the cause of our pain. This unsane error thinking must be interrupted. You'll notice that every time you've experienced a particular form of pain, you've been there. It is in you, it is yours, and to be rid of it requires direct rather than projected access to the root of that pain. In other words, when I lie and say, you made me mad, I'll take the mad part of my mind attached to my brain's image of you, and I indirectly experience being mad, but I believe the picture in my mind that is caused by you. I need to come back into direct relationship with that mad, with the energy at the root of that, rather than project it into my brain's image of you. You experience pain because it's hidden and unresolved within you, not because someone resonates what's already there. Carl Jung had another really powerful thought to offer us on that. He said, until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct our lives and we will call it fate. Once again, remember that life is love flowing through a cell. And anything that inhibits that, and it's usually fear or hostility, destroys life. We must learn to take, if we want to heal, we must learn to take responsibility for what destroys life in us. Anything is less than love, and learn to forgive it. This and this alone is true forgiveness. If I want life, I must apply forgiveness to anything in me that is not love. That is where healing happens. And Jeannie tells me that we've got a couple of callers. So I'm going to put those thoughts on hold. And Miss Jeannie, if you would, introduce our caller.
Okay. The first one is Susan, area code 610. You're on the air. And then we have another caller.
Hey.
Hey there, young lady.
I'll
how are you?
I'll try to be quick with this one. Perfect business with this commitment sheet to send it to my grandson, Jacob, who is like cassetting his abusive father toward his mother to the point where she thinks that she can't let him live with her anymore. Jacob is obviously very unhappy, frightened about his life. He's sleeping a lot. He hasn't been able to get a job. He does have a theater job, but he's behind on learning his lines. I want to send him the commitment sheet, but I'm afraid that he's just going to, as you said, all hell will break loose. So I appreciate that you're bringing this up right now, because we just have a practical situation where I need to reach this kid.
Right.
And if you have, I mean, I would like to, we give him an allowance every week, and I would like to say, you know, this abusive language is a deal breaker. I can't be supporting a kid who treats his mother that way, but that just sounds like punishing. I don't know where to get a toehold in the kind of language I need for him, and I could use a few suggestions.
Can I put a thought in there?
Oh, please do, Jeannie.
It just made me think. I worked with a woman this weekend, and it's a little bit different, but her daughter has gone off to a college in another state, and has her grades have dropped. And so she was asking me what I thought, you know, she could tell her daughter. This next semester, you bring those grades up, or you move back home and go to a local community college. Or if you choose to stay at that college, you pay for the college. And so it's given the daughter a choice. You know, I can bring up my grades, or I lose my money, you know.
Right.
So you can word it in the fashion that it's their choice, that it's not you doing a punishment, but you're actually, it's discipline. It's, you know, showing them the right way. It's not punishment, but it's their choice. You can either do this and continue to receive the money, or you don't have the money. And then they can choose how they want to behave from there. And every choice they make has a result.
Well, Jeannie, we have, I made, Tim and I have been giving Jacob an allowance for a long time, and he's 21. So we called him the other day and said, we'd like to change the parameters. You go to choir rehearsal and you go to sing at the service, and you're a professional singer grade level singer, but you can't be paid because your mother is the dean of the cathedral. So we will pay you $50 for a rehearsal, which is the going rate, and $50 for going to the service. And then the other 50 will be for doing chores around the house, which you really should be doing because you're living there, free room and board anyway. But if we get good reports, we'll give you that 50. Well, he got to rehearsal, but he skipped the service, and he was very angry with me for suggesting that we pay, that his chores around the house be hitched with payment. He says, I do tons of chores, which is just an exaggeration. He's very oppositional, and I don't think he's mentally healthy enough, and maybe this is my bad thinking. I think he's too mentally compromised to do what we hope that daughter will do. Sounds as if the daughter may be a reasonable kid underneath it all and be able to pull up her socks and meet the challenge. Jacob folded up his tents after I spoke to him about the last deal, and he has been in bed a great deal and mad at his mother for trying to get him to go down on some meds because he seems dopey. So I guess I'm arguing with you, Jeannie, because we've basically...
No, I hear you.
Challenging. Yeah, it's been extremely scary for me. And, of course, I'm doing worksheets on and a mind shifter. It's safe and healing for me to be joyful in my wonderful life, even though Jacob is croaking. And I've only gotten partway through that one. What were you going to say, Michael? Thanks, Jeannie.
Well, my offering would be, first of all, that you don't necessarily ask him to live that commitment. You know, remember in the earlier part of today's show, I spoke about modeling. You know, people do what's modeled for them. And obviously, Jacob has had, you know, exactly the whole conversation today. Jacob has had terrorizing people modeled for him. So he's gotten pretty good at it. You know, to think about the stories that I've heard about, you know, the family system, that's kind of what was modeled, and so he's playing it out. And so my thought would be that you model something different, which you have been very powerfully, and you might put it in the form of this commitment. You know, here's what I'm committed to doing with you. That's what I'm going to do. And that might be a starting point. And then, you know, there's nothing, there doesn't have to be anything aligned with punishment to make, say, something like money support conditional. You know, I'm going to hold the space for you, whatever you do. You know, you go to the top of the barrel or the bottom of the barrel, I'm here to hold the space of love for you. But if I'm going to reward you with money, if I'm going to pay you for something, I get to say what that something is. You don't just get to do whatever you want and I have to pay you. That's not how it works. That, you know, it's a very poor lesson to teach a kid that, well, it doesn't matter what you do, you'll get the money anyway. Because when he goes out to get a job, he finally gets one, he's going to tend to think, well, it doesn't matter what I do, I'll get paid anyway. And the world's going to have a very hard lesson to bring down on his head. And the longer it takes, you know, if a two-year-old learns that, you know, a child at two learns that lesson, oh, it's easy. A child at 10 might take a punch or two in the nose, and it's a tougher lesson. At 20, it might be a prison cell to learn that lesson.
Yeah.
So I think it's reasonable to explain to him that, you know, here's what you're going to do. Here's the way you're going to treat him. And the money that I offer to you, particularly brought to the surface because of your bad behavior, your poor behavior, is that I'm going to make what I give you conditional on you being reasonable in your home with your mother. And, you know, maybe explain to him, you know, that's not what's been modeled for him, and you understand that. But he's got some tools, and he's got the support to do it differently. And that, you know, one of the conditions of, you know, whether it's the money for the, you know, the rehearsal or the service or the, and maybe they're all tied together. You know, you can't have one without the other. You can't just get by. Well, if you do the rehearsal and you ignore the rest, $50 a week is all you need, so you're happy with that. No, there are demands. It's reasonable to make demands on a child. And so I think in the posture you're in, and he's old enough to recognize, he probably won't like it, but he's old enough to recognize that. In this case, like an employer, you hold the purse strings, and you're willing to be liberal and supportive with him, but he's got to give something in return. It's not going to happen for nothing. And it's reasonable, I would offer, that it would be reasonable to tie one with the other with the other. If you just skip the service when you're expected to be there, then you just collapsed all of that support. Or you don't get to just do the rehearsal and ignore the Sunday service when that's what you're rehearsing for. Those two are tied together. Yeah, if you do your chores, and one of your chores is to be reasonably respectful with your mother. And if you don't do that, then I'm going to withdraw. I'm just going to be real clear up front. This money is conditional on what you do. So it is your choice whether or not you get it. It's not mine. You're not going to remove it from him. His own behavior will remove it from him. And I think that's a reasonable way to talk to a kid of 20, whatever emotional condition he's in, and, of course, recognizing that he's had a whole lot of terrorism put into his life, and he's learned the lesson well, and he's trying to see how it works. And when you can teach him lovingly, gently, and respectfully that it doesn't work, you know, you don't have to condemn him for, you know, raging at his mother. You can just say, you know, that behavior doesn't work. That isn't how human beings function. And I'm not going to reward you for functioning like that. You don't have to say he's bad or wrong or anything else. Just like, that's not what I, here's what I want to support in the world. Here's how I'm going to treat you. Here's the commitment in writing. And here's what I'm going to support you for by living up to what my life and my world is about. And I think those kinds of things are a very reasonable thing to do, especially with a kid of 20.
That sounds really good, and you make me realize. You make me realize. You have toured.
Nothing like a little support from our friends.
I know. I'm terrified of his anger. It reminds me of his dad, and when his dad thought I was an untrustworthy bitch, which are exact words that he used, I believed him for 25 years and thought, I want to prove to him and the world that I'm not an untrustworthy bitch, but there was no way that he was ever going to care about me.
Yeah.
And
so notice he's a thought terrorist.
Yes, he is.
That's what he is. And his son has learned some of the same.
Yeah.
So, you know, you at this stage, except through critical mass, you're not likely going to have a whole lot of impact on him. But you certainly can have a significant impact on his son, because you are the source of reward for behaviors that you've agreed to. And so, you know, again, my take is you're coming in there out of the blue, giving this young man money. I think it's very reasonable for you to put conditions on it. You know, he's got a condition on you.
So
I want the money. That's the condition he wants. He has on you. Okay. Now I'm going to have some conditions, and here's how it's going to work. I will provide this if you live up to these expectations. It doesn't mean that he's never going to fail, that he's never going to fall, but then, you know, perhaps that's the place to put in, and you know there's some work to do to clean up the parts of your mind, and, you know, maybe even explain to him the whole idea, or maybe even let him listen to the show of thought terrorism, and that's how his father treated him, and so it's natural that's what he's doing. And it's not, you know, notice, Jacob, how that's working in your dad's life. Not very well. And it will never work in your life either. So I'm not going to reward it. I'm just not going to play.
Michael,
and here's how I am going to play. I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect. My thoughts, my words, my actions, whether I'm in your presence or not. I'm here to hold the space for you. And I'm going to use gentle voice tones, and I'm going to honor you. I'm going to treat you with the presence of love in me, whatever you do. And if you'll take that on and start to do that, then I'm willing to extend reward to you and support you. Otherwise, I'm not.
That's great. It's like love bombing him while holding him accountable. And that's probably the only hope we have of getting through, because he was so mistreated that he thinks the world is against him.
Yeah.
So this commitment sheet is a piece of gold. Michael, can I have the most recent version?
Yeah, I'll text you what I just read. That is the most recent version. So I'll text
great.
To you.
Thank
can, you know,
you.
Make it up and print it off and send it to him. For sure.
Yeah, because
that one
is not on the website, Michael.
And resolve.
Right. Yeah.
So go ahead and take the next caller, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, we're here to hold the space, and, you know, you're making a mega contribution and difference in the world, interrupting these patterns in your family system. It's, you know, monumental. So we're absolutely here to hold the space for it, young lady. All right, Miss Jeannie, I will send this to you as well. And let's say hello to our next caller.
I'll have to update that on the website.
Okay.
Okay, next caller is Miss Magda, 828. You're on the air.
Hello, you guys. Wonderful to talk
awesome.
With you.
Awesome. How do you be, young lady? You've been on my mind. I've actually been going to call you for about 5 days. I've got a video link I want to send to you, but things have just been a little hectic here, so I'll do that.
Wonderful. Thank you. And would you please send me a copy of the new commitment as well?
I certainly will. Yes.
I knew I had changed something, but I didn't know what it was. That was my main reason for calling, was to give a testimonial, because you were talking about it before, of the power of that commitment. You had suggested that Chuck and I do it together every day, and we have been for months and months now, and it is really wonderful. We start the day off that way. And no matter what else that happens before the rest of the day goes on, we do it together. Sometimes one of us will read the whole thing to the other, and sometimes we'll take turns with different parts of it, and we end up laughing and giggling quite a bit because it just brings so much joy. And so, I recommend that for anyone and everyone, and maybe Jeannie can tell the story about the man who used it with his wife and his results, even though she didn't know about it. That was a cool story. And
yes.
So that was my first thing was testimonial. And then I also wanted to comment on what you were going through with Susan. And I fully agree with what you said, Jeannie, about giving the person a choice. And it really applies to adults just as well as kids. It is better if we – I'm huffing and puffing because I've been doing some work around here. If we can start out when they're little, then they realize that they have choices and choices have consequences, and so it's cool. But if they haven't been exposed to that and they need to learn it, and it's very good to learn it later, that can work too. It's just a little bumpier to get there. And what you were saying about the difference between, what I heard was a discussion that clearly identified the difference between unconditional love and unconditional acceptance of the person without unconditional acceptance of their behavior. And that's really important.
Right. And I would shift the languaging about the love to, because, you know, if I say don't think about the color of your car, of course, what fires in brain cells but the color of your car? When I use the term unconditional love, what fires in the mind but all the conditions it could attach to it? Where when we shift into the language of all embracing love, then the mind goes into agreement with, I'm heading for all embracing love rather than unconditional, because as long as I'm talking about unconditional, there's a part of my mind that's reserving, if it happens, there'll be something different happen here. Whereas when I enter into the practice of whatever, whoever you do, you could be Satan and Hitler and, Mussolini and all of them put in one, and I'm going to stand as a space of active present love. It's not conditional upon what you do, and I choose to embrace myself and the whole creation in that.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean I have to behave the way you might want me to behave, but I can be that space and hold that space in an all-embracing way.
I really like that terminology, all-embracing love. So what would be the parallel if we talk about, well, I guess it's conditional behavior. That's what you're really talking about.
Yeah. I'm going to, you know, in this case, young man, I'm going to hold you in this space. Whatever you do, my behavior isn't based on or predicated on what you do in terms of the space I hold you in, but how I reward you with my money is definitely based on and conditional upon your behavior. Because I'm not interested in rewarding poor behavior. I just, you know, I don't want to live there. And anybody who does would have to be insane.
Right, right. Good. Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
All inclusive. Very good. And that's a good one.
All-encompassing, all-embracive, all-inclusive, yes. Words that indicate that to my – and the primary reason for that is I want to indicate to my mind how I want to function.
Yes.
And my mind's been programmed like everybody else with all kinds of conflicting stuff. So as I get deeper and deeper clarity, you know, the new line that's been added to the commitment came from some voice tones that I discovered myself using that I didn't particularly like in my body. And certainly I'm sure that anybody I used them with wasn't, you know, overjoyed at it. So that's the newest piece of that I'm going to utilize voice tones that indicate my total caring and embrace of you.
That's great.
And it's just another subtle piece that, you know, we can say, well, I'm treating you lovingly, gently, and with respect. But, you know, when you did that yesterday, like, well,
right.
That's not quite an indicator of loving, gentle, respectful space being held. And, you know, it's subtle, but the mind can play all kinds of games. You know, I mean, the tricks it can play are unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
Even on ourselves. So that's where that piece came into the commitment.
Well, I'm liking that, the idea of all embracing, all inclusive, to not only think about other people that way, but of course, my relationship with myself.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, good definition.
Yeah.
And it
ultimately leads to me recognizing that the number one thing I need to be concerned about in my life is, do I maintain my own human life? Because love is my human life. When I give it up, I've lost my life. I may be able to walk and talk and I look and sound like a person, but there's no life in there. If you define, you know, our definition of life that I found to be most useful is that life is love flowing through a cell. If I do something, even with my voice tones, it inhibits that. It's my life that I'm losing.
Mm-hmm.
I may think I'm doing it to someone else, but it's all smoke and mirrors. If I put an inhibitor into love flowing through my cellular structure, I'm the one that's in trouble.
Because we always
and get so I'm them. Committed. Yeah, and I'm committed to maintaining my human life regardless of what happens in the world.
Cool. I love it.
And of course, where does intelligence come from? The mind of the past that replicates, or a live, aware being called love that has the genius of what in the ancient teachings they called the mind of Christ. Literally, that we have that mind available to us, and that is the mind of love. Nothing religious about it. It's just, where do you want to live?
Indeed.
Yep. And our culture teaches us to live in the mind of the past.
I'm going to add one more thing before I sign off. I need to go and finish something. And so in regard to the commitment, we sometimes have fun with it as a way of bringing attention to ourselves or the other person, that what they're doing or the way they're sounding does not coincide with what the commitment had said, what we said through the commitment in the morning. And so it's just going to that one line and
know, kind of looking each other in the eye and just repeating that one thing, and then we can have a chuckle about it. And there's
a chuckle.
A chuckle. Yeah.
Hey, Chuck.
Yeah. So anyway, maybe someone else can utilize it that way too. I'll listen to the rest, but I need to sign off right now.
Okay. Let me just, seeing as how we're on the phone and you've shared in the past the challenges with your blood pressure and that you've been working on it, the reason I was going to call you was to ask you, if you don't mind, how you're doing with that.
I had an appointment with a cardiologist last week, and he took me off of one of the medications, which I'm really, really terrifically happy about. So I will have an appointment in a few weeks to have echo done so that they can find out if my heart is stronger now. And it should be, because I've been using a treadmill 30 to 40 minutes a day. And
awesome.
Yeah, so after that, I'll get together with the cardiologist again, and we'll see what happens. But right now, everything's
cool.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, anything that you come across that is about relieving blood pressure problems, I'm open to it.
Well, I will send you this link directly, and I'll send it to you, Jeannie, as well, to put on the website so anybody has access to it. But it is a mind-boggling, to me, piece of information that just is like a whole new piece to the puzzle that nobody has known, literally, in history that I know of. And these physicians came up with it's so mind-boggling when you watch it that you'll, I think, just love it. And what they've discovered.
Yeah, I'm glad you get
is
to
that,
me a little. I
yeah,
don't want to wait.
Right. Well, what they've discovered is that uric acid to almost all degenerative disease and high blood pressure being one of them. And this is not a piece of information I've seen anywhere in the culture in 50 years of, you know, being in the health field. And what they're showing, you know, you might remember a few years ago, you know, sugar was the bad guy. And they brought out fructose and said, see, fruit juice and fructose, there's the new sweetener, the wonderful sweetener. And now we've got high fructose corn syrup in virtually everything, including little kids' drinks and foods. And it's disgusting. But what they discovered is that fructose and regular sugar, a component of it is fructose and a component of it is sucrose. So it has the same problem, but fructose itself, you know, the reason why they said it was a healthy sweetener is because it didn't raise blood sugar. It didn't count on the pancreas for metabolism. But what happens is it's metabolized by the liver. And when we start using fructose all the time, the liver gets overwhelmed and the liver converts it to fat. And now people have fatty liver disease, which is, unless you do some really sophisticated testing, and the average physician is never going to find and doesn't know much about anyway. But fructose leads to fatty liver disease, leads to the production of uric acid, leads to people getting fat, and leads to people getting high blood pressure.
I hope you send that today.
Say again.
I hope you send that today. I want to see.
Oh, it. I will. I'm getting ready to paste it in a text to you right now, and I'll send it to you, Jeannie, so you can put it in the notes for me once. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It's actually, I mentioned the other day, if you were listening, another video to watch, and it's done by the same group, and it's actually University of California Medical School. And watch the video, take the time. You both will, I think, really enjoy it, especially with the way you're into food and growing food and such, called a video called Foodgate on YouTube. And then and they go into, in this video, Foodgate, how the tobacco industry came to con the world for decades that nicotine wasn't addictive.
Right.
Guess who set up, and this is all covered in this video, Foodgate, guess who set up the tobacco industry to be able to pull that con for so many decades and cost millions of lives? The guy who did the same thing for the sugar industry 25 years earlier.
Yeah.
Same guy, same con job, and it's still going on.
Wow, that is for sure.
Right to the point. I mean, they go into, in Foodgate, they go into how the sugar industry went to two researchers at Harvard University top and paid them off to tell people that fat was the problem. Remember in the 70s, 80s? Oh, high fat diet, that's the problem.
Right.
Guess who set that up? It was the sugar industry. And what they knew is they literally, this guy in Foodgate quotes, he shows that, you know, the document quotes how the sugar industry literally said, if we can get people to believe this high fat diet is the problem, we'll sell a third more sugar to them. Because you'll notice everywhere that there's low fat, there's added sugar to make up for the taste.
That's right. Wow.
It's just mind-boggling. And then when you take, you know, you look at Foodgate and look at how that unfolds, and then you see that the sugar, which is partly sucrose and partly fructose, so it goes to the liver and creates this problem. And then, I mean, fruit juice, they're like, don't touch fruit juice. And he goes into actually explaining how the different types of bulk in a whole food actually block the pathways that end up allowing, you know, leaky gut syndrome. I mean, the whole thing is just mind-boggling.
Wonderful.
When you look at it. And the story covers 15 million years. They went back to genes that were resurrected from apes 15 million years ago to understand this.
And Michael, do they have recommendations?
Yes.
For what we should be? Yeah, good.
Eat whole food.
Right.
The basic recommendation is eat whole food. You start refining it, you're in trouble.
I understand that fatty liver has become much more pervasive in younger people, younger all the time. Yeah.
Well, what he points out, what they point out here is that diabetes, for instance, used to be a disease of alcoholics. We've only got 60 seconds. But now they've got kids at 8 and 10 years of age that are exhibiting the diseases of the alcoholic. Why? It's because of the fructose going into the liver, and it's creating the same alcoholic syndrome as alcohol did, because alcohol is basically a sugar. But instead of being 60 years of age, these kids are now 8 years of age that are getting the liver diseases of the alcoholic at 60, because they're being force-fed fructose. I mean, go look at the sugar and the fructose, even in the little kids' foods. I mean, there's some of them now that are getting conscious enough to take it out. But anyway, it's all mind-boggling. We're down to the last few seconds. I'll send it to you. Everybody have the best year yet of your eternal life. I'll send it to Jeannie so she can put it in the notes so it's accessible to everybody. Thank you. Blessings. Bye-bye.